collateral damage statue here at the town clock.
Okay.
How many
flowers for him to book?
How many? Oh, well, that should be amusing for him. How many of you were there?
There were about six of us, just as the night before.
And I understand there was some earlier event here that the Resource Center for Nonviolence had. Were you here when that happened?
Earlier today?
Yeah.
No, but I heard that they cleaned the entire area and polished the statue.
Did they offer to serve as peacekeepers in case the police come again this evening? Or let me put it this way, do you plan to stay the night tonight?
I will be here as long as I possibly can.
Well, I know that this event, certainly you've had a large voice in planning this event, right? You put a lot of energy into it.
We held three planning meetings inviting all of the witches, fairies, and political activists that we knew. And so in the planning meetings, basically everyone took flyers and distributed them as they saw fit and created more flyers of their own with their intentions on it. And they basically, it was distributed just by word of mouth and handing out flyers. And so there's actually low publicity, I think.
Well, I know you had about, I was here last night, we had a large circle, about 30, mm-hmm. 35 people here the night before. There were 60 or more people.
Yeah, I think it was about 50 or so. Mm-hmm. A nice circle, mm-hmm. with beautiful energy.
And did many homeless people show up? I noticed we have a homeless, one of those homeless bum ne'er-do-wells already here, Dan Hopkins. Hi, Dan.
Hi, how you doing?
Dan, this clock is an old venue for you. You've been here before, right?
Oh yeah, I've been here many times, many protests, especially about the homeless. And I'm glad to have this going on here because it's like right in your face, police. You know, right in your face, real bad. Yeah.
Well, I'm sure you'll be there tonight to serve as a mediating force when the the police come in again
right.
confiscate the flowers.
Right. I can't stay too long because I'm trying to find a job, you know. So I'll probably be here at 9:30, though. That's the time that they have the circle, I think, or thereabouts.
Tina, anything you want to add?
No, thank you.
Thank you for your work here. Well, it's just struck 1 a.m., August 13th, Friday the 13th, at the town clock. I'm in a vehicle parked across the street from the town clock. Kind of keeping an eye on what's going on across the street. Just outside the range. Although, actually, I am sleeping illegally in my vehicle at the very moment. So, I am potentially a target as the vigil or the Festival of the Dark Goddess also was last night when it was closed down by the police department, and is again tonight. We're going to see what happens here. As I look out, I see about 10 people, some tables. Don't know if there's actually any sleeping bags tonight. And those are the perils of trying to narrate when you're sleepy. What happened was the organizers of the protest, the vigil themselves, on, I guess it was Thursday night, broke down the vigil early, thinking that the police were going to come back, and so in effect, the police chilled the protest. It did not stay all night. And I believe the next night they also ended it early in order to do a celebration, kind of a party at another spot. And indeed, I don't think their primary purpose was to dramatize the fate of 500 to 1,500 homeless people in Santa Cruz who have no legal place to sleep. Even if they try to make their own legal place, they're subject to a $54 fine, which is increased with failure to appear fines. And they can then be subjected to warrants and their vehicles confiscated if they have vehicles, if they're given those tickets, and then the tickets go to warrant. So this festival was not primarily concerned with, I think, with the homeless per se. It was, had a number of functions. But indeed, it raised the issue and shows us that the reality of the sleeping ban has kind of permeated, at least to some level, of the community. Though there are many people who still don't know that there is a ban on sleeping for the homeless people in Santa Cruz. They ask, what about the shelters? And you tell them that there are space for 28 to 30 people each night in emergency shelter on the floor of churches. And that means out of a total of, as I said, 500 to 1,500 people, less than 5% have any possible legal place to sleep that the city provides. And yet the city will still go after people for doing what they have to do, sleep at night. They're quite surprised. The issue is supposed to become a hot one soon because David Silva, you can't keep this guy down. He's pushing for a second initiative to repeal the sleeping ban sections of the camping ordinance. This one, similar to the one that he, I, and others pressed for last year, is even more moderate, or watered down, if you want to call it that, designed to appeal to the city council to do something. And it should be available, I think, within the next week. It's going to be filed with the city clerk, though he's having trouble getting the funding to do this. We have an incoming call.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Well, hello there, Robert. I want to commend you on your undercover operation there.
Undercovers, actually.
But how could you be sleeping and narrating at the same time?
I kind of narrate in my sleep.
Well, just a comment on the Vigil of the Dark Goddess. It's also a religious... first of all, it's a religious, I don't know, whatever they're doing there, and obviously you can't express your freedom of religion there in the kind of clock after dark, for one thing. And the second thing I wanted to bring up was the Resource Center for Nonviolence little whatever they did thing there. They brought chamois out. I was there that day. It was really weird. I thought it was some of the folks there from the Vigil of the Dark Goddess because I saw all these people like caressing the statue, and I'm like, oh my God, what's
the collateral damage statue, which is kind of a large metal sculpture of kind of a family welded together by a nuclear explosion, right?
Exactly. And it was interesting because the night before is when the police came and shut it down and told everybody to leave, and then the next morning I showed up to see if they're there, and the city came in and did all this massive cleanup. So they had to know that the Resource Center for Nonviolence was going to be doing something that day, and I think that possibly may have had something to do with them getting shut down.
Well, the Resource Center for Nonviolence has never been particularly high profile in supporting the rights of poor and homeless people, particularly when it was under the domination, and may well still be under the domination, of former council member Scott Kennedy. So, I mean, that's certainly a consideration. I haven't really looked into them. I know they were very slow to protest the bombing of Yugoslavia. That was really a scandal. And they never really did much protesting of the Yugoslavia. I don't recall one resource center. Well, I do recall one resource center for nonviolence person, maybe two actually, who was arrested at the office of Sam Farr with me and other people. That was Peter Lumsdaine. And mm-hmm. I believe there were a couple of others who were supportive who came.
Well, they're also getting money from the Justice Department too, which is kind of interesting.
You're talking about the COPS program?
Yeah.
Yeah, that, of course, was a big scandal where the Resource Center for Nonviolence actually split the Resource Center. I guess Doug Rand and other people, maybe Peter Lumsdaine as well, were very upset that not only were armed police officers from the Santa Cruz Police being allowed to walk into the Resource Center for Nonviolence with their weapons on without being called or without there being an emergency of any sort, sort of as a part of their natural routine, but also they were the Resource Center was sort of... they were funding a snitch to help with an anti-drug or anti-gang program down in the beach, either the River Flats or the Beach Flats area.
Was right.
It really, of course, for those of us who've known the Resource Center for Nonviolence under Kennedy, and also, who's that fellow, the Gulf War vet, whose name I... He seems to have faded into the woodwork.
Right.
He was, an up-and-coming city council contender.
Right.
God, I don't even remember his name. He was a sort of a fair-haired boy who led a not rent control, but sort of actually ended up being a landlord subsidizing program to help landlords build little gates on their property or something.
Right.
Trying
to help some of the.
Anyway, under Kennedy and his protege, it was they were really doing all kinds of compromises with what were the basic nonviolent principles of the Resource Center. And of course, I personally challenged Kennedy when he was mayor, he was a cover-up artist extraordinaire for police misconduct. When you, as you know, Bob, the police broke the ribs of one man, Jason, and another woman miscarried after she was struck in the stomach by police, who were essentially arresting people for sitting down on Santa Cruz's Pacific Avenue.
1994?
That's correct.
May 11th.
May 11th.
I was there. Yeah, I saw some of that. I saw police officers hitting people.
Now, some mainstream media, although most mainstream media distorted it, the Santa Cruz Magazine, which no longer publishes, and one of its most famous articles, had a...
Right before they went under.
Yeah. Denunciation of the police violence, but Mayor Kennedy had no problem with that, nor did Council Member Rotkin, who was right there backing up the police and backing up Kennedy, and nor did Cynthia Matthews, who was also on the City Council at that time.
Well, I just found it interesting that like a lot of times the Resource Center does little, they have little things happening there at the town clock or the collateral damage statue.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes, like, Food Not Bombs will be feeding there, or other people will be feeding there. And there's an obvious separation between the two groups, even though they're both nonviolent groups. There's this separation that I'm really tired and sick and tired of seeing. You know, it's like they have their way of doing their nice, proper way of living, and then here's Food Not Bombs with the ragamuffins and all this, and they don't even want to be a part of that, and it just kind of shows the kind of separations that happen between some of the activist groups. And
sort of a snobbish, elitist attitude.
I
had that impression of Peter years ago, and actually I was very impressed that he came into the group when we were sitting in Sam Farr's office to urge them to stop dropping cluster bombs,
right,
stop dropping uranium-depleted weapons, and stop dropping bombs, period, over Yugoslavia. And he was able, I think he was very... very much a part of the group and a part of the people there, and I thought that was commendable. But in the main, Resource Center has always seemed to be an elitist group that's led by a few individuals who have very rigidly middle-class concerns, most of them, at least those who seem to be most high-profile.
Right.
And I know, I would love to see a change, but again...
They always put the work of Food Not Bombs down. That's one thing, because Food Not Bombs used to have an office there. And, of course, we had homeless people in the office sometimes sleeping, because that's what ran Food Not Bombs, was homeless people at the time.
Yeah, I remember Doug Rand had everybody evicted.
Yeah, and I don't know, I'm just really, there's a lot of groups in town that have all kind of, that's why we can't seem to make a whole lot of changes, I think, is because there's always this little nitpicky bullshit against each other, but against that little nitpicky thing. You know, you're not vegetarian, you know, you don't listen to independent music, or you don't do this, you don't do that, and it seems to divide all of us, you know.
Right, and I even though I am critical of people like Doug, who's now, I guess, really seriously ill. I don't even know if he's still alive. I assume he is.
He was at the over there at the thing when they had students cleaning.
Oh, that's good.
He was there.
I mean, I hope he's doing well. I know that he personally had me expelled from, you know, from the different groups last fall against the Beach Area Working Group that was trying to, you know, unseat the council, even though, you know, he had no cause whatsoever to do that other than disagreements with me,
like all the other people that have expelled you.
Yeah, I didn't do it. Bookshop Santa Cruz. I mean, I've never liked their books much. Actually, their books are fine. Yeah, Neil Coonerty, of course, he was an opponent of the downtown ordinances, and
mm-hmm.
when we led a protest to the store, he decided that politics stops at the cash register's edge, I guess you would say.
That's right.
And that's where it went. That's interesting. You know, I was quite a... I was a supporter of his boycott against... what was this bookshop across
Borders?
Well, Borders is a new one.
They're moving in.
The old one was...
Crown.
Crown Books. You know, I thought, right on. I would go into Crown. I'd read all the time, but I think on one occasion I bought something. I believe that, you know, Coonerty's bookstore is a better deal for the community than any of these stupid chains, which, you know, 85% of the retail business is now taken up by Barnes & Noble and Borders statewide, which is really an obscene and shocking figure.
Yep, and the union busters, too.
And so much as I may disagree with Coonerty's position, I continue to do so around, you know, sit on the sidewalk near a shop, go to jail, and that sort of thing. I will still definitely encourage people. I'll actually encourage you to go to Logos, but you know, if you, you know, if you have to choose between Coonerty and Borders, definitely go to Coonerty's Bookshop Santa Cruz.
I suggest go to the flea market.
There you go.
Or possibly
buy from Gorilla Booksellers on the streets. Or Free Radio Santa Cruz Booksellers, for heaven's sake.
There's going to be a bookshop actually opening up, the info shop at 224 Walnut.
224 Walnut.
Anarchist Library, which you probably can't find some of those books.
Wow, and that's a 22. When is that going to open?
I have no idea when the exact opening. Maybe somebody else can call in with more information. They had a benefit the other night. I don't know if it's quite ready to open yet, but it will be in the near future.
Well, that's great. I know that Berkeley has had an info shop for a number of years, and it's
long haul.
It's real hard to get in there at times because you don't know what their hours are. But they've been, you know, they're interesting libraries, publications you cannot purchase anywhere else.
Mm-hmm.
And an organizing center and a kind of a community meeting place for different groups, as you're saying, where groups with different points of view can get together and communicate, you know.
Well, hey, I gotta go.
All right.
You're having an excellent show this morning.
Particularly with you calling in.
Thank you.
All right.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
And that, of course, was Skidmark Bob, a radio commentator on Free Radio Santa Cruz, former cop watcher, former Food Nut bomber, current parent, and here's another call.
Free Radio Santa Cruz welcomes you.
Hello, Robert. This is Vinny.
Hey, Vinny.
I just had a couple of points to quickly make. The person you guys were talking about was Eric Larson.
Thank you.
From Neighbors of Lower Ocean.
Oh, boy. Obviously, it's that Alzheimer's disease.
Getting old. But let's see. What did I want to mention? Yeah, I wanted to piggyback on the Rhizone Info Shop. You'd asked when it's set to be open. Theoretically, if all goes according to our plans, then we should be open the first week of September to the public, and we will have an extensive array of books that you probably won't find in either of those Borders books or Bookshop Santa Cruz, for that matter. So I would encourage people to go there instead of either one of those places, mm-hmm. personally.
Definitely. I know there used to be a bookshop up on Laurel Street, the IWW bookshop, back in the late 70s. That's where the I guess it's turned into a second-hand store. It's right kind of kitty corner from Foster's. I don't know if you ever saw it.
Oh, it used to be Trader Jim's, I think. That's closed down too now.
It has, yeah. But it was always reassuring. Particularly, I know, and I want to say this for poor and homeless people. You know, if you haven't got much money and you walk into one of these big chain stores, you're always given the impression that people are looking at you, particularly
oh, yeah.
the management.
Yeah,
they're
absolutely.
Afraid you're going to steal
exactly.
something. You're not welcome. Whereas smaller stores, older stores, I mean, you may get that impression. That may happen there, too. But I'm homeless again. But when I was really homeless in a position with virtually no money, and that was like 10 or 15 years ago,
mm-hmm.
I remember how welcome it was to find a store where I could come in and look at a book and just kind of take a relaxing breath and not
yeah.
feel that I was, you know, some sort of freak or
miscreant.
A dirty scumbag, you know. you know. Now, of course, I am a freak and a dirty scumbag, but that's how it goes.
Well, I don't want to take up too much of your time here. I've got to get back to work, honestly.
Remind us when your show is, Vinny. I'm looking at the schedule, but give me a quick reminder.
Rocking the Boat with the V-Man on Wednesday nights at 9 p.m. till 2 in the morning.
And you'll be covering issues like the fate of free radio in different cities?
Yeah, I cover the micro radio, news out of the world of micro radio, and try to do a lot of different, I don't know, police abuse stories. I'm trying to actually broaden into more globalized news, covering more stuff happening around the world. But
that's it from 9 to 2 on Wednesday. And while we're at it, when does Skidmark Bob, our previous caller, have his show?
Oh, God, he's on all the time. He gets so much airtime.
Yeah, the guy is, I mean, I think we should charge him quadruple rate.
His own show is Friday nights at 9 p.m.
Friday from 9 to question mark.
Yeah,
question mark.
Till the end of time.
Independent Landscapes and Soiled Underwear.
That's
with
it.
Skidmark Bob.
But he's also in the studio almost every day. Whether it's live or a loop tape is determined by the listener, I suppose.
You check to see if any equipment is missing after he leaves?
No, he's actually our fix-it man. He's the one that brings equipment in and fixes it and keeps it up. And the gad about free radio.
Indeed. Yeah, this is the truth. I was just razzing. Let me ask you very quickly before you leave. I know you're working. You haven't got much time. Any updates briefly on free radio in the last 2 weeks we should know about what's happening in different cities?
Nothing really, honestly, because the FCC was accepting public comments up till August 2nd on the rulemaking number 99-25, which is the notice of proposed rulemaking regarding the issue of low-power radio or micro radio. So that
it's just verboten.
It's kind of in limbo, yeah. They haven't moved in on any stations that I've read about recently. Although there is this this coming weekend, actually this weekend, there was a workshop in Berkeley, and I think that took place yesterday, or maybe it's taking place today. But this coming Saturday, there's also going to be a gathering in Berkeley, and it's I think it's being dubbed the Western Regional Gathering for Micro Radio.
Really?
Yeah, and
you know,
that's
people
at one.
Get more information about that.
That's going to be at 1 p.m., and I think it's at a place called La Peña.
Uh-huh.
I'm not sure of the exact location.
La Peña Cultural Center.
Yeah.
In Shattuck.
Yeah, that's it. Mm-hmm. It's going to be happening there next Saturday, I think.
So that'll be
the 21st at 1 p.m.
1 p.m. Saturday the 21st is a Micro Power Station gathering.
Mm-hmm. The Western Regional Gathering.
Okay. Western Regional Gathering. And you had commented with all the brouhaha around KPFA, and we may be doing a little bit of discussion of that today, too. People have been forgetting the micropower situation.
Yeah, it's definitely taken the eyes off of what we're doing.
And the really, micropower has really, I mean, KPFA in its day did definitely cross a lot of important barriers and uphold a lot of important, release a lot of important information and cultural expression that you wouldn't find in mainstream radio.
Right, right.
And they still, to some extent, have been doing that, although they've been, you know, really dropping off on community news, firing a lot of people. Even before this latest massacre, they were doing it. They were getting rid of people, and nobody was, I mean, only a few of us were complaining. But your point is that now there's this big, huge community swell behind getting back KPFA, which I think is good. It's great.
It's important, yes,
yeah.
But it's taken the momentum away from what, you know, what's more, to me is more important is, you know, every community around the country having its own micro-powered station instead of, you know, one big 50,000-watt station for the whole region. Because really, I mean, yes, KPFA does cover a lot of important news that you don't get on most radio stations, but, you know, they don't cover hardly anything in Santa Cruz, you know? I mean,
what
turn on and it's like, it's all about Berkeley and San Francisco, and
mm-hmm.
And that's important because those are key areas in this region, but It's not localized.
You know,
enough.
It's always tempting to turn your focus on these other areas far away. You can be an expert. You can be a sort of a, you know, an aficionado at home and sit back and you know support the Nicaraguan
right.
You know freedom struggle and support the Colombian rebels. But when it comes to the people down on Pacific Avenue, don't give them any chance.
Right, exactly. You know, like think globally but act locally.
Right, and I guess the question I have for you is, what you're also a man who knows something about local radio stations. Have all the other non-free radio stations, let's say the, you know, the ordinary licensed stations.
Like CUSP?
Like CUSP, like KZSC, like KSCO. What, do you have any insight for people as to what's the best, but what's the situation with these stations? And are there any programs that you particularly think are worth listening to for those of us who are interested in local affairs?
Well, KZSC does try a little bit. There's a show called Green Voice on Tuesdays at 7 p.m. And that's really good. It follows the KPFA evening news. And they cover a lot of environmental stuff. They'll talk about different things locally and regionally. There's also another show.
What station are we talking?
KZSC.
KZSC.
Although I would, you know, still tell people not to listen to it ever. But this is a good show at 7 p.m. on Tuesdays.
Mm-hmm.
It's called Green Voice. And then there's also, geez, I think it's Thursday night when you're on. I think it's from 7 to 8:30. On KZSC. It's called The Politics of Social Reality, and that's Bob DeBolt, who covers a lot of non-corporate type issues.
Yeah, Bob is a real rebel. You got to be careful. He keeps talking, even if you fell asleep while he was with you, he'd keep talking to you.
Yes, yes, that's true. He does tend to dominate the conversation.
Unlike myself.
Unlike you, of course.
Yeah.
But that's a pretty good program. And he airs Making Contact as well, which we air here on Free Radio every Wednesday at 8 p.m. and then on Monday mornings at 8 a.m. But he airs that, and let's see, there's another show that is on, I think it's Wednesday, and it's called Talk About, and it's pretty much a call-in show. You can comment. I mean, he usually picks a topic every week, but he covered some of the...
7 to 8:30 or something?
I think it's 7 to 8:30. He covered pretty extensively the rent control issue pretty recently.
Michael Samnight or something? Michael.
Yeah, I don't even know his name, honestly, but I catch that every now and again as I'm preparing for my own show on Wednesday nights. So.
Well, what about, what's happening, if any, with Monterey Free Radio and Big Sur Free Radio?
They've gone the way of the Internet, and now they're broadcasting to the Internet, which I think is a waste of time. I think if we're going to really, you know, put pressure on the FCC, we need to remain on the air in defiance of their laws. And what happened with Monterey was back in June of 98 when Claudia Wilkins was issued the injunction against, or issued the FCC an injunction against Free Radio Berkeley, it sent shockwaves around the micropower movement, and stations like San Francisco Liberation Radio, Monterey Radio, Free Radio Monterey, and other stations around the country as well, all got scared and went off the air because the wording of this ruling by Claudia Wilkins was so broad-based, where it said, it literally said, anyone acting in concert with Stephen Dunifer is enjoined in this injunction. And so it scared a lot of people off the air, and they were one who went off the air back in June due to that ruling, and they have not returned since.
I heard Free Radio Berkeley, not Free Radio Berkeley, but I guess Berkeley Liberation Radio.
Berkeley Liberation Radio has reclaimed 104.1. They're operating 7 days a week from 8 in the morning till midnight.
Mm-hmm. How are they? Have you heard their...
I haven't heard. I don't get up to the Bay Area too often, unfortunately, but I've spoken with Gerald Sanders, who's one of the founders of Berkeley Cop Watch, and he's been instrumental in... He was a former Black Panther, and he's been around this movement for a long, long time, and he's involved with Berkeley Liberation Radio. And says they're doing real well. They're, you know, picking up new programs and keeping on, keeping on.
Now, so, finally, and I know I've said that four times,
yeah. But
the Internet, it's a bad thing to go on. Should Free Radio also be broadcasting on the Internet here in Santa Cruz?
Would I think it would be good if it was, you know, in... You know, if we stayed on the air, of course, and picked up our signal and sent it out to the Internet, that would be great. You know,
is that hard to do? Or?
It's expensive, yeah.
I
don't know. I'm not that technical. There's other people involved in our station that would probably be able to set something like that up. But I think solely broadcasting on the Internet is a waste because, for me anyway, I mean, the message on my show tries to reach people that are not being reached by the normal, you know, media,
mm-hmm.
The mainstream media. So... I'm trying to reach, you know, under, you know, poorer people, basically. And the Internet, I mean, I don't own a computer, you know. It's like, and not only do I not own a computer, if I did own a computer, I probably wouldn't have the software to be able to download a live stream audio feed. So it's only reaching a small number of people. And, like, most of the people that have computers that have the capability to download live streaming audio probably wouldn't even listen anyway, you know, because the message is too radical or something, but... So, yeah, I think it's personally, if you're just going to broadcast on the Internet, it's a waste. It's not worth anything. And, unfortunately, it's like, it's not even that renegade because it's not even being regulated at this time.
Hmm.
So, you know, it's legal.
And more important, it's not really accessible to...
Yeah, that's the main focus for me. It's that it's not accessible.
Mm-hmm.
But, however, if it was in conjunction with broadcasting over the air, then you're able to reach people across the country. I mean... Like, there's just a micro station in Texas called Kind Radio San Marcos, Texas. And that's about 30 miles west, I think, of Austin.
Mm-hmm.
And they're one of the flagship stations in this movement. They've gained a lot of support. And they broadcast live on the air on two frequencies, mind you, on 103.9 and 105.9. And also, they put their audio live stream on the Internet. So anybody around the country, around the world, can download and listen to their radio live. And it's like an 11-second delay. But you could even call in from Japan and get on Kind Radio, you know, a small, I think there's 60 watts.
Well, it's just there's so much good programming. I mean, I like my program, of course, and I Uncle Dennis, who follows me on Thursday nights, he actually, of course, records his own show for Playman and
right.
other radio stations. Your show often has the kind of update that nobody that I know of, not just in Santa Cruz, but elsewhere, does the kind of collating of information that you do around free radio. And I think that's something that could be productively broadcast all over the country, and it would be of interest to every single free radio station in the United States.
Yeah, I've been working on that. Actually, when the info shop opens, the Rhizone, not to change the subject, but it kind of is along the same lines, we are setting up office spaces for a lot of community groups, and Free Radio Santa Cruz is going to have an office there where we'll have an off-air studio for people to produce, you know, tapes that we can send around the country or upload to the Internet, or even for new people that want to become involved in our station and they don't have any way to make a demonstration tape for us. They can go and access the equipment and be able to make a loop tape and get their own show. So that's a real positive thing that we're doing with the Info Shop, as well as, you know, providing books and a space for people to read. We're also going to have offices for, you know, a lot of community groups, people like the Free Mumia Coalition, Free Radio, like I said, Earth First. Huff can probably I'm sure Huff can get in on that if Huff wants to.
Mm-hmm.
But we could talk about that off air.
Sure.
At another time.
And, of course, for those who want to get on air, who want to get a show on Free Radio or want more information about Free Radio, they can, of course, call the voicemail.
Which is 427-4523.
Indeed.
And send us loops. We do have lots of open times, and we're trying to fill those up as quickly as possible. And if you want, you can make a demo tape of whatever kind of show you'd like to do, be it 60, 90, 120 minutes, whatever. Put it all on a tape. Make sure it's completely full, end-to-end, with whatever talk, music, commentaries, what have you, that you want to do on all of our airwaves. Then please do that and send it to us to P.O. Box 7507, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. And we'll see if we can plug you into our schedule.
And again, the voicemail, if you've missed the address, is 427-4523.
That's right.
Thank you.
Hey, good show today.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Santa Cruz?
Hi, I thought I was calling during the song.
Oh, would you like to be off air?
I don't know. I don't care, really.
You sound like that radio broadcaster, Linda LeMaster, who has her show on Wednesday at 10 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
It's called the Open Air Show.
Yes, it is. Thank you for the plug. I appreciate it. Can you tell the folks about my show?
Well, you know, I wish I could. I have only heard one of your shows. I guess
you've been... Shame on you.
Indeed. I am really an inbred broadcaster. I'm trying to get a little bit more outbred, but...
You know, me too. One of the reasons I'm doing this to make a show is because I never listen to radio anymore, and I noticed that.
Mm-hmm.
And how do you know what's going on in any immediate sense if you don't listen to radio?
What's coming up on your next show, Linda? You know?
What's coming up? I'm going to see if I can read Howell Ginsberg's... What do they call it in this newspaper? Seminal poem.
Mm-hmm.
And I got some poetry by Philip LaMancha that I really like. I probably shouldn't read it. It needs somebody good. And if I could find any, I would read some Vinaigrette. And I got two back issues of the People's Tribune that I want to read. And I wish I had a helper that could read it in Spanish because it's a bilingual newspaper and it gets stuff in from all over the country and even
if anybody,
past the borders.
Maybe we do a little. We can, you know.
That's my big
recruiting.
The top
here.
Of my wish list for my show.
Si hay alguien ya que puede hablar español.
No, well, you could do it.
See, if anybody here does speak Spanish, my Spanish is not really. I feel good enough to deal with. Complicated or
well, we just
vocabulary
gave you the first
rich
few
poetry,
paragraphs,
you know?
And that would get it started, and then we could still keep recruiting. I love to work with young people, but
well, anybody out there who speaks Spanish is willing to spend an hour on the radio. Is that?
And they don't even have to do it every week. Like if they have a college schedule, that's
sure. Give a call
some Wednesday mornings. It'd be so fun.
Well, how about
and also I play a lot of old music, and I lost some of my best tapes.
Well, maybe they could. You want to give out your number on the air so people can call you, or would you like them to call the voicemail?
No, they can call my voicemail. I have a voicemail for Housing Now in Santa Cruz,
mm-hmm.
and it's 457-9754, box 182, or I like to write extension 182.
So again, that's 457-9754, extension 182?
Yeah. And if they're interested in the rent control thing, they could do that or meet at the Saturday meetings at the Java House.
So you're also been involved with the rent control proposal to have an initiative. I guess you're circulating
well,
a
I've not
voter
been
initiative?
Nearly as involved as I wanted to be because I got meningitis and I broke my arm and several of my friends that are families lost their houses at the same time.
I know about that.
It's really weird right now in this town, you know? But anyway, so I want to be helping it.
And I know you have a meeting every, what is it, every Saturday at 3,
at 3, it's Saturday at the Java House.
At the Java House downtown.
The city's not as good as it used to be, but they got live trees. It's really a nice place to meet.
How did your last meeting go yesterday?
I don't get to go to it. I never seem to have any stamina by Saturday.
Well, perhaps.
I walked up a mountain the other day, so my back's been out, but I should be fine by Wednesday.
Well, perhaps Bob LaMonica, who I guess is one of the other
yeah.
key originators of the Rent Control Initiative, if he's listening,
I encourage
Bob to give a call in. I know I spoke to him last night, and he was very enthusiastic. He apparently went on community television last week.
That's great, yeah.
And he spoke, he and Michael Rotkin, of all people, were on the same side on this issue.
Well,
on Rent Control.
Well, Rotkin's always supported Rent Control.
You wouldn't know it from anything he's done.
Even when he was a socialist, he supported Rent Control.
He hasn't taken any initiatives on Rent Control since 1982.
Well, yeah, no,
I'm afraid.
Neither is hardly anybody else.
He's been in a position of power, and I think that's what's significant. He's kept his profile real low on this issue, and I'm glad that Bob LaMonica and you are smoking him out. I mean, actually, you don't need a rent control initiative, as I remember you and I had this disagreement, or perhaps this discussion at the last meeting. I'll shut up in just a minute after I get this out, which is, you know, all you need to do is convince 4 members of the city council to pass some kind of rent stabilization initiative, and you won't have to go through the 3,900 voters, and you'll have it go into place immediately.
Yeah, I think we should do that, too. I've been trying to find someone that's with enough better credit than mine to get us a room at the Civic so we can have some indigenous-type community meetings about what that could mean, what face it would have, who would be in charge of knowing what qualifications people would be expected or wanted to have.
Mm-hmm.
It's like you're concerned for this new homeless issues task force. We need to make it be a community dialogue. Otherwise, it'll be some bureaucratic product.
I want to talk to you about that, but I also want to encourage, I don't know how many people are involved, but I encourage folks to come to your rent control meeting at the Java House or to give you a call either as a Spanish translator for your show on Wednesday from 10 to 12 at 457-9754 extension 182. My memory is pretty good today.
Yeah.
But also to look into this issue of rent control and how to, I think if you get enough people to, well, I've been suggesting this to the Bears and the people in the beach flats who've been looking for alternate housing for people other than this kind of sellout Dolphin Lee project, as I view it, the one that evicts all the homeless people down, or the Hispanic people down
we
there.
We can't let that program go forward the way it was planned. It has to come from that community.
Right, and I think if you had some mass marches down to City Hall of the people who demand housing who've been evicted, and then you kind of connect that up with lobbying of city council members for a real rent control action immediately, I think that, you know, you might actually get somewhere, particularly if Rotkin is on your side. And the reason I say that is Rotkin, you know, I mean, Rotkin's supposedly the conservative on the 3-4 side of the 7-member city council. If he goes on your side, then, you know, you would presumably have 5 people on your side already, although, again, I haven't talked to buyers. Do you have any indication?
Why would we get a unanimous vote? I mean, it's like giving the city council a little piece of cheesecake, you know?
Well, you might. If Rotkin goes along, it might press Hernandez and Matthews to join him. But have you had any indication from the buyers' majority if they'd be interested in a rent control legislation themselves?
No, I've because of physical breakdown problems, I haven't been in touch with them enough. I have 2 calls I haven't made to Keith Sugar. I've got to do it. But I thought if all else fails, I would try to show up when they dedicate the police center and ask a few questions of them each
in
public.
I think that's going to be postponed again, isn't it?
I don't care. It's sitting there empty. It reminds me of how they had the first River Street shelter. It could be occupied.
I think
so. At least have a rally there. Liberate the parking lot for people.
Good idea.
You know?
Hey, how about that, everybody? Let's liberate that police station.
RVs that are people's homes lined up at Scotts Valley. There's no place to be where the water and services are. It's a stupid system. You know, I guess this is a political indulgence. In our city, you hear these politicians like your Rotkin friend talking about, we pay more than our share. The rest of the county doesn't pay for their share of people who are broken down and made homeless and de-citizenized and even deported and stuff, or the vehicles stolen from them that have their babies' pictures and birth certificates in them. So out of control. It's so dangerous for people.
Mm-hmm.
But
Well, I think we actually have talked about
Other cities are doing their our share of the job where it comes to people who live in or travel in vehicles. You know, there should be co-ops where they can just park, and that should be an absolute right and a given in the tourist economy.
I think that's completely. I think it's a great idea. I know that you've had a number of such ideas. You ran for city council in 1992.
Yeah,
and that's the same time that you were
more co-op housing in the town.
At the same time as you were being prosecuted for a peaceful occupation of the Heiner House, which actually successfully liberated it, as I remember.
Yeah, what I didn't understand legally was how come if it's so criminal for us to be in there because some alleged earthquake era engineer said it's dangerous, that the newspapermen, even the Mercury guy, and cameramen and city firemen. How come they can go in there and tromp around without even taking care of what they do see? You know, that could have been a youth center with some residential housing. It's so well located to knit the community.
We're talking about a building, of course, that was previously at the corner of, what, Church and Chestnut, something like that?
Yeah, it's at the bottom of the hill when you come into town from the freeway.
It was moved to make, it was supposedly damaged by the earthquake and then kept left vacant for 3 years and then moved. It was going to be raised, as I understand, to
wait a minute,
to provide for a church, for a police parking lot. And, yeah. And instead of doing that, maybe we got the worst of all worlds. They built the parking lot on the police station at a cost of now over $13 million in another place. But your occupation helped to actually keep that building available for, what is it, mothers with kids?
It went through three transmutations. It ended up being housing for families that small families that have kids who are trying to go to college or some kind of training school.
Were they originally going to demolish it, or what was their original
plan? First they were going to demolish it like they did the poor tree that used to be there, you know? And then they said they were going to have single-room occupancy houses in that group that Bruce Van Allen used to work for, the Pre-Mercy Housing Corp.
William James Association?
No, it's something
community
like
housing?
Santa Cruz
Community Housing or something,
Yeah, Liz Fogel's group, and they were, it just pissed me off because there wasn't any housing for families, and the original layout of that house, that should have been a historical building and never uprooted. That was such an obscene thing they did, like those trees Jillian was talking about on the west side earlier this past year. It was just way out of kilter of any kind of good public policy in my
But it, so you say that the...
It's a beautiful house. It should have been restored to its original house. It had two open kitchens, but at least it's, you know, still there, and people can live in it that aren't
through,
rich.
Yeah, through the civil disobedience of a number of people, you and
in jail time. And having to talk back to these judges that think you're going to sit there and let them tell you you did something wrong without even you getting a word in.
Back in 1992, due to your willingness to, you not only risked arrest, you got arrested. And at the same time you were running for city council, it was quite a time.
I try not to be impetuous, but they were talking bulldozers.
Now it seems you're using sort of more conventional avenues. I know you've been appointed to the Homeless Issues Task Force, which, as I understand it, has its first meeting 5:30 on Wednesday, the 18th at the ABC Room of the Civic Auditorium. That's 5:30 Wednesday, Civic Auditorium and ABC Room. What can we expect from that group? You know how I've been quite sarcastic.
I wish
sarcastic,
I could say it would
but,
be a warm potluck and the Civic would be open till at least midnight, but I'm not in charge yet.
I think Don Lane is currently in charge, isn't that true?
Oh, I don't want to... Should we talk about this on the air? We so disagree.
That's all right. No problem. I think that we can agree to disagree.
Oh, that's too delicate for me.
But in any case, what's going to happen at this first meeting? I know Don Lane is your
$7,500 staff
member.
That we'll be outnumbered. Yeah. It's a sad thing the way they organize how staff gets paid. The city doesn't support its employers very well.
I mean, you have a group of 12...
Like taking a subcontractor like that.
You have a group of 12 people, and then Dick Wilson, the city manager, and Mayor Catherine Sleeping Band Byers got together in secret and decided to appoint Don Lane, who's also a former mayor, a one-time liberal who actually became part of a political opposition at the last council, at the last election, and he was, as you know... he was a fellow who didn't oppose the Sleeping Band.
I never saw it that way. Saw it as a guy that we lost, humanists and street people, because he tried to fight the Sentinel and their editorial biases and stuff and speak out in a different direction that's just as important for our trying to hang on to her human dignity and viability.
How did he speak out? Remind me.
He was just calling them liars and stuff, you know.
About
trying
what?
Trying to expose how the Sentinel selective reporting and even untruths.
Liars on what issue?
And then they start picking on him personally because he called him on it.
Well,
I don't remember, unfortunately, but
yeah,
I hope
I
still
kinda
have
do.
The file.
I kind of remember he was part of the group that sent the nasty Valentine to the mayor
of
Scotts
Valley.
No, he wasn't.
That was Mo Reisch.
No, that was,
before.
Mo Reisch, Marty
Wormhout.
Mo Reisch, Marty Wormhout, and I believe there was a third, was it Jane Yokoyama or Don Lane, one of the three.
I don't believe Don Lane did that.
He was a subject
of... He got me convinced about most of those other
He was
attitudes.
The subject of a recall, Linda, in 19...
No, I would remember that.
I circulated the petition.
He might have been
on
the council.
I remember.
Oh,
he
good.
He was the subject of a recall back in 1989. Actually, I didn't circulate the petition. I moved at the HUF meeting, the Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom mm-hmm. meeting, that he not be included in our support of that recall effort. The recall effort was organized from the right by Steve Hartman, and it was against Mo Reisch, Marty Wormhout, and Don Lane, the three of the four new actually those were.
Oh yeah,
he
was on the council then.
Yeah, he was. No, he was the subject of the recall as well, and
But for what reason? I don't remember the bad case Valentine connecting to him.
That was the reason. They connected that with all three of them.
Well, show me
and
your
the thing
petition
was,
someday.
The thing was, I mean, I didn't care about the Valentine. I cared about...